Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you to episode 77 of The Prerogative. Well, we've returned from my Thomas's birthday bash, or as I lovingly now like to call it, the Absolution Network roast of Thomas M. Mattis.
I refer to it as Thomas mindlessly masturbating for 2 hours.
I hate you.
I know you do, and yet you need me for ratings.
Like Comedy Central needs South Park.
No, people haven't cared about South Park for years, except Sailor Moon fans, because Kenny turned into her.
Well, that voice, by the way, is our special guest for tonight. He was on the birthday bash. He called in. We had some fun. Though he didn't have the witty banner moment of the night, as he usually does, but joining us is Edwin, my co-host over at Comic Book Crazy.
Hello, my babies.
Have you gotten a chance to listen to the birthday bash yet?
No, I haven't had a chance to listen to or stream anything. I've been doing 12-hour days.
Yeah, Phantom had the witty comment of the night.
Well, he is a writer professionally, so yeah.
Let's just say that it, when you hear it, it's in regards to Pacific Rim and pedophilia.
Oh, Pacific Rim and pedophilia. Things that should be you, the peanut butter and chocolate. Or lesbianism and, you know, I have nowhere to go with this joke, unfortunately.
Thankfully, none of these topics have anything to do with our wonderful show we're reviewing this week.
Bullshit. Lesbianism has everything to do with Collider Star. I don't care what the directors say. When you see Anna and Mia, lesbianism is a factor.
Well, that's because your mind is dirty.
Look at them! Look at them together!
And... just because one girl has a short haircut and the other has long hair, one's a tomboy and one's pretty, doesn't mean that one's a lesbian.
One? Okay. They stayed in the same bed when they had to live with Sora's boyfriend. They are a bit too close. One is basically has all the fangirls. They are bleeding subtext.
Isn't everything in our world bleeding subtext?
You can't see the face I'm making right now, I'm thinking.
He's thinking.
Processing.
Yeah, he's processing. But while you process, today's topic, if you can't already tell, is Kaleidostar New Wings, aka the second season of Kaleidostar. I reviewed the first season all the way back when, episode 17 of The Prerogative, with, of course, with Lucid Dream, which, you know, and that, of course, was so much fun. And, of course, part of the reason is Lucid and, of course, Edwin, I reviewed, Kaleidostar back on the Hijacked podcast all the way back when.
Which proves you don't have an original thought in your pretty little head.
You're absolutely right, I don't. I just like having fun.
Nope. You're probably right.
So, New Wings, you know, with Thanksgiving. And part of it was I wanted to review something that I was thankful to have on my DVD shelf. An Animal is Thankful was made because I enjoy it a lot. And Kaleidostar is one of those franchises that I'm very thankful was made. I mean, as I've said before, I think Kaleidostar is one of the best anime franchises of the 2000s.
It was a great franchise that got aborted prematurely.
Aborted?
It just sort of came. It had two seasons. It had one OVA special. It had two other OVA. And then it just kind of stopped. I think they went for a sequel series, but that just kind of stopped.
I can agree that I can certainly see that they could make more from this franchise, but, and again, as we'll talk about with this season, this being the second season, the last season, you know, where they ended was, you know, it was a great place, you know, for it to, if the series was to end, for it to end.
It ended on a weird part.
We'll get to all that when we get into the story. But yeah, the Kaleidostar New Wings is our review. We don't have any emails or comments. So we're just going to get right into our synopsis and right into our review. First, for those who don't know Kaleidostar, Kaleidostar New Wings takes place about 4 months after the ending of the first season of Kaleidostar.
It kind of does just pick up right... I mean, it starts pretty almost immediately. Parts of it do anyway.
Well, the first two episodes are flashback episodes, but that's here, not there. Anyways, Sora Nagino is now the clear star of the Kaleido stage, and is trying to do her best to keep Layla Hamilton's dream alive. But with lowering attendance and the arrival of newcomers like the God of Death, Leon Oswald, and the perfect technical performer in Mei Wong, Sora Nagino will find it harder than ever to become a true Kaleido star on the Kaleido stage. This is Kaleidostar New Wings.
Otherwise known as the less successful half.
Let's start off with music. So, Edwin, of course, you being the guest, I'll let you start off. What did you think of the opening and closing of New Wings?
You know, it was good. It was just kind of generic. You know, it was nice synth pop. It's forgettable.
I'll disagree. I mean, I found the opening theme to be right in line with the other two opening themes of the series, which were very good. It was definitely a bit more darker, I think, to reflect the more darker themes of this season.
More darker? Are we in third grade, man?
Yes. Have you not listened to my shows?
It's either more dark or darker. One. Two. Dark bad.
To reflect the darker themes of the season. And the ending theme was very much right in line, very similar to the ending theme from season one. Though I will say I like the one in season one better.
Yeah, I especially like Boku wa Kokuni Iru.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I liked it.
The rollerblading.
rollerblading.
Here's a show about the circus. Now let's watch everybody rollerblade.
including Mr.
Policeman, and who is on classic roller skates, and we have Fool doing it too.
I just call it what it is. They're practicing for their future as a all-female roller derby team.
Oh, and that explains why Ken is on that team. Oh, Ken.
the only female that is not technically a female in this cast.
Oh, Jesus, Ken.
He has some good comedy with this. We'll get to all that.
Ken is your source of awkward comedy. Like, Ken says things, and you just feel like digging a hole and hiding in it.
No, Ken says things, and then nobody notices him, and you just want to go and pat him on the back, like, we feel your pain.
I have a great idea! So what were you talking about? God damn it, listen to me!
I'm not invisible!
Yes, you are.
But with that, let's talk about the overall score, which I thought, for the most part, it's pretty much the same from the first season. With a couple of new themes probably put in for May and for Leon. But overall, same, not only it's the same score, but also how they handled the score in a very sort of circus type of way stayed very much the same. And, again, it's one of those things of if it's not broke, don't...
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I got confused with one of my favorite jokes where I say, if it's broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I mean, they kept it as one series. New Wings was mostly for the DVD or English release. So for the most part, it just all this does is provide a good continuity of series since they did have one score to work with.
Yeah, we have to be honest here. This is really. New Wings is really just the second half of the Kaleido Star series. Basically, if you take the first 26 episodes, that is season one, and it was basically a 50 episode series that they split into two different. Well, they were two different seasons, but they split on a DVD as two different seasons.
Granted, pick up the whole DVD box set as one set. From their distributor still, I think.
You mean from Funimation?
Okay, is Funimation's doing the release now?
I think Funimation now has the license.
Yeah, because I actually have the ADV box.
Oh yeah, I have the ADV box sets of both Kaleido Star and Kaleido Star New Wings.
And I have an autograph from the director, which I stuff in there.
Well, which director? The ADV director or the Japanese director?
The Japanese director. Fuck the ADV.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I have... Let me see. Oh, not on that one.
What's that? You're a sub-elitist? No! I just don't care about the voice cast.
Okay, I'm going to have some fighting words with you when we get to voice acting. But that being said, but yeah, just great continuity, and I love a lot of the playful tunes. The more dramatic tunes really were enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah, it's just, it really does capture the mood.
Perfectly, especially of a French circus like Circus du Soleil. I mean, I can see this music being in Circus du Soleil. That's the thing about
Cirque.
It. Cirque du Soleil.
Cirque du Soleil, yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to what all of tonight is going to be. Edwin correcting my English.
And at the end of the evening, you're going to get a special treat as I murder him.
For all the crimes I've committed against the English language.
Oh, man.
But anything else you want to say about the score and maybe the music?
Not really. I mean, the score, I think, has been covered by everybody who's ever, like, reviewed this show. It's a good score. It's simple. It's fun. It's, you know, it doesn't really stand out, but it doesn't need to.
Well, it doesn't need to, but I think it's, I mean, this is a soundtrack I would enjoy listening on its own. But I think a better way to say is that when you're watching the anime, it doesn't stand out too much. It doesn't overtake the animation or the story. I think is a better way to say it.
Okay.
But do you agree with me?
I neither agree nor disagree.
You're meh.
I am meh on the music. I have really, really, you know, high expectations for music. Mostly based on the fact that I'm a fan of, like, the Digimon franchise, the Sailor Moon franchise, who were scored by the same composer. And both of those were actually really excellent.
Mm. Yeah. Well, with that, let's move on to animation. Let's move on to the overall animation style of Kaleidostar, which, again, for the most part, it's pretty much the same from the first season. But for those who didn't listen to episode 17, very nice line work, very smooth. It, you know, to an extent, it's classic Gonzo work as well, being that it was animated by Gonzo.
Yeah, it's good. It's simple. It's not overshadowing anything.
The colors really pop. You know, there's a great sort of balance between, especially when they, as we'll talk with, you know, backgrounds and special effects. You know, there's a great balance between CG effects and traditional animation here. The character, as we'll get to with the character designs, they're all fun and everything. I mean, just the same sort of art style from the first season. If I had to put it away, it was just just darker a bit. Again, to reflect some of the themes that the season goes through.
Yeah, this season just decided, hey, you know all that fun and joy of the first season as Sora's enthusiasm and love really helps her build things up? Yeah, we're going to get a tone drama. Are you ready, kids? I thought so.
Aye, aye, Captain! I'm sorry.
You've seen too much SpongeBob, and that's sad.
No, actually, no. I don't watch SpongeBob. I just know it's opening.
Everybody knows it's opening. That's what I mean by too much.
What did you think of the character designs overall?
I thought the the female character designs are great.
I mean, I'll agree with you. They are wonderful. I mean, for everybody that always talks about how, you know, anime is nothing but big boobs or fan service and all that, I always love to quietly point them to the female character designs in this
series.
Okay,
the people who say that don't actually watch anime, and mostly they're stupid.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, the comments and the opinions of one Edwin do not reflect the opinions of the Absolution Network.
Fuck that. I'm part of the Absolution Network. My opinions represent everything.
But no, But it really is. I mean, and not just for those who want to say it's fan service, but a lot of people have an assumption about what anime, how females are drawn in anime. And this is, I think, especially the female characters, especially Sora, I think it's a great showcase of really just maybe how wrong they are.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Granted, she's all of 16 in throughout this, but at least she looks somewhat 16.
Well, but there's also nothing sexual. She's very she has all these elements that are great for sort of a main lead to have, especially a female. I mean, she has feminine appeal, but it's not sexy.
No, all the sexy belongs to the older ladies, and especially to Layla.
Which I'm very thankful for.
I tried to get a meme going that Layla wasn't just a bitch. Layla was queen bitch.
I remember that meme.
Because it's true.
But, you know, Layla's, again, just fabulous. And all, you know, Rosetta, to Mia, to Anna, all of them are great. I also love May's design because I love how it's really in contrast to Sora's.
Yeah. May is the last interesting person introduced in the second season.
Because, again, May's design, again, the darker hair, sort of the wide look, and the darker colors in her design are very much in contrast to the more brighter colors.
Well, she's a rival character. They're going to put her in, you know, colors that are... They're going to have to visually make her as different from Sora as they can.
Even though she
very quickly stops being the rival in any legitimate way after a while. And she becomes Sora's comic foil.
Which we'll get to. But at the same point in time, I think my argument here will be there are a lot of shows that where, yeah, they have rival characters, but they don't go to this type of length to where just the color scheme of each character is contrasting, you know, to represent that rivalry. They don't go to the length that this series does for the rivalry, you know?
Yep. Yep. I mean, what am I supposed to say there?
I'm right.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Oh, my God. I was this close from somebody actually saying it.
It hurts.
It hurts you on the inside to say that, doesn't it? Let's move on to the action animation, which would be, I guess, the performance pieces and everything like that, this is one of the highlights, I think, of the show, is that they really pay attention to the performance, because that's, again, this is what these characters do. It's why we're following them. So, again, watching them perform and watching the performances to try to get the same type of vibe that the audience is feeling really, I think, goes a long way to making this series very good.
As they perform their pseudo-magical, illusions for the show.
Well, but again, I think we talked about this all the way back when, for Colloidal Star, they're magical and, you know, there's illusion and everything, but the tricks they're performing are not so far out of the realm of, you know, them not being... I mean, with the exception of the legendary technique.
And
with even
the angel maneuver! I'm sorry! That is not a move somebody can pull off.
I think it can. Again, it's when you have the trapeze that they have at the end, I think it's something they can perform.
Oh, man.
I guess my point here is that the physics are not too far out of the realm of possibility. And as long as you can make it seem as if, like, this could possibly realistically happen... You know, you can draw people in.
See, it's not realistic. It's believable. You know, because half this stuff ain't realistic. The spiral, the death, all this stuff, that's not likely to happen without somebody getting hurt. Is it believable? They can make you believe it.
But, you know, overall, the tricks and maneuvers and the animation around it are just gorgeous.
Yes. Yes, they do. You are right about it looking gorgeous.
Somebody say I'm right. How much did that hurt you?
Shut up and die.
This is why I brought you here. You're my Mei Wong to my Sora Nagino.
Never say that. I can find you. I can cut you.
Animation was great. I very much enjoyed it. And then, of course, last we had the backgrounds. What did you think of the backgrounds and special effects?
The special effects and backgrounds were they were still on par, actually, with the previous series, but they did up the stock footage for a lot of the stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The first season, they cut their corners by doing a lot of stills, and you know, and they did their fair share of stock footage, but here they really just sort of knuckled down and would reuse things like the Devil Spiral over and over again. They would just try to... They had a budget to deal with, so you can only do so much. But you could feel the lack of resources kind of start to set in. As they were... Because they had to save everything for the end.
Yeah. But at the same point in time, you know, I thought the backgrounds were still just as gorgeous, just as beautiful. Again, a very early use of CG in hand-drawn animation, at least from modern anime in Japan standpoint, which Gonzo is well known for doing. When you see the Kaleido stage, it being really a 3D set. And yet, I think they did a great job of blending it in with the hand-drawn animation. I mean, to us who've seen animation over and over again, it's fairly obvious. And maybe at this point, you know, it has aged a bit to where it may be obvious to most people. But especially at the time, you know, if you put yourself in that mindset, it's not that obvious.
Yeah.
But anything else you want to say about the animation?
I mean, it's pretty. It's still very pretty. It still holds up, you know. Actually, I prefer older animation as it is, because as time goes on, they've been moving more and more towards CG color, things like CG coloring, which doesn't have the nuanced lines to it.
Yeah. Well, that's a discussion we can go hours on.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we're going to take our break. I'm going to play a couple promos for you. And when you come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. So we'll be right back, folks. After these messages, we'll be right back.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who. I don't care for anime. I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is. A crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and from there you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Longbox.
a podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help. You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
I'm going to regret this.
This is ridiculous.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express, non-stop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
No!
Cannot get your ship out.
Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fantasy.
F*** Lando Calrissian.
Star Wars Monthly Mondays, available the first Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it with acting, which of course means it's time to go over our synopsis list. So, Edwin, you ready for me to destroy the English language completely?
Oh, God, give me a minute. The hurting.
Here, just pop these Flintstone vitamins, and it'll heal it.
These aren't Flintstone vitamins. This is meth.
They're Flintstone vitamins.
Why is it all smoky?
Now that we have Edwin in a good mood, let's go over our synopsis, shall we, folks? First, we have Cynthia Martinez as Sora Nagino.
Or Hirohashi Ryo, as I know her.
You can say the Japanese, I'll say the English.
Sure.
We have Hilary Hagg as Mei Wong.
Arg, Mei Wong.
Mike McGrow as Leon Oswald.
Leon Oswald, the second least interesting character in this show.
The second least interesting man in the world.
As for Mei Wong, by the way, Mai Nakahara. And Leon was Sakurai Takahiro.
Sandra Cross as Layla Hamilton.
Layla. I think there's a song based on that. I think she's named after a song. But she's Ohara Sayaka, which I'm sure a lot of anime fans have heard that name before.
Mm-hmm. Jay Hickman plays Fool, the spirit of the stage, and stealer of the show.
Koyasu Takehito.
Who can play a perfect
pervert.
The legendary John Swayze, or as I like to call him, John Holy Crap Swayze, as Ken Robbins.
Shimono Hiro.
Ilitch Gradiola as Yuri Killian.
Oh, God, you just abused that name. Chiba Susumu.
Yeah, right now I have the Tallahassee police checking me for assault on that name.
Ilitch Gradiola.
Mm-hmm. Nancy Novotri as Mia Gullion.
Chinami Nishimura.
Kira Vincent Davis as Anna Hart, excuse me.
Anna.
Voiced by Edmund.
Working on it. This thing is not in the order you're working with, okay? Because why would it need to be?
Yeah.
Arg.
Well, as you try to find her name, Kim Lee Nguyen as Marion Benigelli.
Akina Watanabe for Anna Hart, and for who is the Kim?
Marion.
Marion. Marion, the child that actually became that. It's amazing that a small, annoying child is still more interesting than Leon.
Ladies and gentlemen, by the way, this is what we call filler.
Fumiko Orikasa, whose name I have heard before.
The legendary Tiffany Grant as the Shawn Michaels of the series, Jonathan.
Etsuko Kuzakura.
Serena Vargas as Rosetta Pastel.
Mizuhashi Kaori.
Shannon Emmerich as Kathy Taymor.
Is Kathy even on this list?
I don't. I know she was on Wikipedia.
Then she's on here.
She's at the very bottom.
Of course she is. Kotono Mitsurishi. Hey! Otherwise known as the voice of Sailor Moon.
Fighting evil by moonlight.
Or Minato from Evangelion. Or XL. Or.
Well, it makes sense that she's from Evangelion. We have Tiffany Grant here. Lucy Christian as Sarah DuPont and also as Kate.
Sarah. And that is Aya Hisakawa.
Rick Buford as Carlos Edo.
Carlos, I think he's some kind of Greek man, and he's Keiji Fujiwara.
Mm-hmm. And finally, James Reed Faulkner as Mr. Policeman.
Mr. Policeman. Police.
A.K.A. the only legitimate black person ever drawn in an anime.
There have been a few. Unsho is Ishizuka Unsho.
And that's our cast.
No, Unko. That's terrible.
So, what did you think of the cast overall? Because, obviously, I love the English version. You love the Japanese cast.
You know, I've seen both versions, mind you. The differences are subtle. The most I can give you is that the English cast is a little bit less... They're a little bit less nuanced. They're a little more extreme. And Sora is played a little bit more like, "Hi, everybody!"
That being said, Cynthia Martinez is wonderful as Sora. In fact, that's really the only role... When it comes to remembering roles she's done, that's the one role I really remember her for.
Maybe, but for me, Sora, like as I know her in the Japanese, she's a little more like a Japanese teenager, you could say.
Well, I just think that the difference is, I think what you're saying is absolutely right. It is a bit more nuanced in the Japanese version, where the American version, it's a bit more in your face.
Yeah, and I mean, Mae barks in the Japanese version in an awesome way.
But, you know, again, Cynthia does a great job of bringing great energy to Sora. Hillary Hagg You know, it could say, well, I recognize the voice as Hillary. At the same time, it's great to see her playing a different character than what they usually have her play. That being, her and Monica Rial is always the Moe character.
Moe.
But here she's to the extent the rival and sort of the villain in the first part, which is great to see. I love when you get to see voice actors and actresses who usually play one type of character and they cast against it. Because it usually leads to great things and shows you the range of the actor.
On a similar note, there is an anime currently airing called Kyosho Giga. And it stars the queen of Moe, Rie Kugimiya, as the very not Moe, goofy, hyperactive main character. And it's kind of wonderful.
What anime is this again?
Kyosho Giga.
Is that the one by Gainax?
No. It looks like it's made by Gainax, but it's actually a Toei project.
Is it Kill la Kill, or is that a different one?
No, it's absolutely not Kill la Kill. I haven't actually seen that one.
I actually got to watch some of it. It's very good. But if we were in a place to actually talk about the new season, we would. Because I would be spending the next half hour talking about how anime fans are horrible for what they've been saying about I Want to Be the Strongest in the World, but that's a whole different story.
A show I care nothing about.
Because you don't like wrestling and you don't like fan service.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I also prefer shows with that have punk music.
Going down the list, I mean, all the voice actors did a great job, just continuing the great job of the role they did in season one. Like I said, Cynthia had the great energy with Sora, and I just love that, again, because Sora's story went to a lot of different places that showed a great range of emotion for Sora, for Cynthia, that she did. I think all the characters did a great job in the acting. Again, especially for Kim Anyun, who played Marianne, and Serena, who played Rosetta. Again, their characters having more story and having more to work with, they really got to shine some more.
Rosetta is unfortunately the only voice actress I could not get behind. It just, her ADR is awful.
All the voice actors, again, Lucy Christian, every time I watch Cloud of the Star, it just amazes me hearing that voice. Because it seems like every voice she's done in every other show, it's like, oh, that's Lucy Christian. You hear Sarah here, you don't know who that voice actor is, and you go, holy shit, that's Lucy Christian?
Oh, the wonder of an accent. Oh, hello, darling.
And she is wonderful as Sarah. I mean, part of that comedy relief, and it's she's always fun when Sarah's on screen.
Sarah makes me slightly uncomfortable at times. Sarah is,
why?
Because Sarah, for all her well-meaning and beauty and good nature, is just a little bit racist.
What?
It's not in any bad way, but she has a weird level of prejudice about Asian people.
I wouldn't call it prejudice. You know what I'd call it? She's an early anime fan who doesn't know as much about Asian culture as she thinks she does.
Those people actually have a name, and I don't think you want to call her that. You'd be calling her a weeaboo.
Weren't we all, though, at one point or time?
I admit fucking nothing.
Okay, I'll admit it. There was a point in time where I thought I knew as much as I thought I knew about Asian culture, and boy, was I wrong. Now I've grown up.
You've grown.
I read books.
I've been around a whole mess of Asian people. By the way, you know that type that's really cute and tiny and really adorable? Did you see an anime? They exist.
They don't.
No, it was scary. I met one. It was like, this person can't be real. She's adorable.
Tiffany, again, going with the comedy relief, Tiffany Grant, why she's a great voice actor. There are points where Jonathan steals episodes with It's comedy.
It still amazes me that they felt the need to redub a seal. It's like, what?
But aren't you glad they did?
I don't know.
Because Jonathan's so fun in the series.
He's the mascot character.
So overall, for the protagonist and the supporting cast, you thought they did a good job?
I felt they did an okay job.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have the antagonist, which in this case would be, you know, we talked about Hillary Hagg and Mae Wong, but also to an extent Mike McGraw and Leon Oswald. And, of course, it is that, you know, being that it's Coletta Starrett, that they start off as enemies and rivals, and they then become friends. And
can
I
you really
they...
call Leon a friend?
Oh, a partner.
I hate his character I hate his character type the most. I have important things to teach you, but to do that, I'm going to be an asshole and not actually explain things so that you have no perspective for why any of this is happening. Nope.
Great, he fits in with the rest of the cast of Collider Star when it comes to Sora.
He takes it to another degree. Like, he is the Chris Yutakigawa of this series. Suffering makes me noble. No, it makes you stupid.
But I think they did a great job to do enough to where, you know, towards the end of the series, and again, reflected in Mike's acting, to where you felt for the character towards the end of the series.
Yuri was a dick. I wanted Yuri to win.
Well, anyways, with that, let's move on to story. Let's talk about the overall theme. And, of course, that being of the French circus and of the art of performing, which is sort of the Laylard themes in this series.
I felt like it had no direction. It kind of had two different directions that it went in. Like, if the first half was like, okay, we need to shake things up, we need to change it, so let's give Sora some rivals, yeah. Let's, and these new rivals will take everything from her so she has to build herself back up again. Because that was so interesting the first time. And then it just transitioned into, you know, Sora has a new goal where she wants a stage without conflict.
Well, you know, I think what we're talking about here are two different things, because you're talking more of the plot, and I think it is safe to say that whereas the themes of the French, again, these are the same theme from the first season, but whereas the themes were sort of equal with the plot in the first season, the plot overtakes the themes a bit more, and it's one of the things that hurts it in this second season. But at the same point in time, the themes of, you know, the French circus of performing and the importance of, you know, the importance of a smile, the important things you need to know in performing are there. And they give a great backbone to the series.
One thing I did like was the focus on the fact that Sora had been spending all of this time exclusively training for this thing or that thing, and now they needed to work on her core strength. Now,
yeah,
it's absolutely balls, considering that she had to have core strength to do most of this stuff, and she had been a solid, stable performer this entire time.
Well, she had core strength, but it was balance.
She'd been working on a tightrope.
But as they explained it, she compensated by working her legs more.
Maybe.
I mean, that's the thing, is that the thing you're talking about, and I guess we can talk about the overall plot as well, since we're kind of getting into it, of Sora becoming a true star. You know, it was a thing to where they explained it in the series. They at least explained it enough to where it made sense to me. And I think it would make sense to a viewer. That, well, this is why they're doing
it. I am a viewer.
I'm a viewer, too, and that's what I'm saying. It made sense to me. It would make sense. I'm talking about a viewer, somebody who may have not watched as much anime as we have.
It's inconsistent with itself.
It made sense to me. I don't know what show you were watching.
It's like, it's one of those things. Okay, she had to go through all this. She had to train all this stuff, but it wasn't enough. No, she was compensating because of this, and therefore she doesn't have the core strength.
But along with that, you talked about what they did in the first half of the season. Well, and look, theirs is a very, I don't want to call it cliche, because it's not cliche, but it's a very common sort of plot of, you know, the hero, where you come back with a hero, and we have to break the hero down to build him up again. And while I do feel that is the part that really hurts this season, is that I think they spend too much time breaking her down. The building of her back up was just wonderful to watch. And again, that goes to you fall in love with Sora's character. You really feel for her character. You care for her character so much that it hurts you to watch her be broken as she is in the first half of the season. And it brings your heart joy in the second half when you get to watch her succeed and achieve her dreams.
Yes. You definitely do have that attachment to her character. I should hope you have that attachment to her character. Otherwise, the show fails at its core, existence.
Well, and that's true, but there are other shows that that will have characters like that. Maybe not these themes and this, but like action adventure and stuff where they need you to care about the character, and you can't because they fail at it. Like, Death Note.
You were never supposed to care about Light and Death Note. Death Note is Scarface for the anime crowd.
You know what? That actually oddly makes sense.
You're watching it from the villain perspective.
Yeah. Let's not get into that. That makes sense, but that's a whole different story. But no, but that's what I'm saying. It's like there are series out there to where caring about the main character is an important aspect to why you care about the series. Here, they do it well.
Yeah.
And it's part of the reason it succeeds. It's also part of the reason why the first half of the series hurts so much, and it's part of its downfall. Like I said, I think they spend way too much time on breaking her down.
Yeah, it's like they needed to take her back to the beginning because reasons? They could have invested that time in at least three other arcs.
Well, but with that being said, let's go into the third point, which is the supporting cast and their roles and how they help the series. There are some great filler episodes in this season with the supporting cast. First and foremost, the Marion's episode, where they introduce the kid stage.
Mm-hmm.
My God, that is a wonderful episode.
That is a good episode where she actually picks up her mom's... she joins in the tradition.
Yeah, she joins in. I mean, just the fact that it's starting off with this little girl talking to a grave. I mean, I understand that maybe a much more that's inclined in sort of Japanese tradition of going to the grave and talking to the dead relative, but for an American audience who, again... And let's call it what it is, the age ghetto that they put cartoons in, that's a very surreal scene to see in an animation.
Well, I don't think this was a thing that was... that was a pretty normal thing for a lot of kids back then, in anime.
Yeah. In anime, but I mean, for somebody who's not watched anime, they may be surprised, and they may see that as a more mature scene, and it is a mature scene. That's a very mature episode. And sort of... The feelings that Marion and her father are going through, Marion not wanting her father to know that she loves being on the trampoline because she's afraid of him hurting again.
I don't know if that's a mature thing because that's very resonant with kids. I don't want my daddy to hurt, so I'm going to keep a secret. And how that plays out, that's a lot of kids go through that.
I always look at it as a more But I think the way she approached it was more mature than what, or at least what an American kid would be. But I thought that was a great episode.
It was a great episode.
I thought the episode where, you know, again, Leon's backstory was explained, that was a fun episode. Of course, that's also because it had some great funny moments in it. We're going to get to the comedy in a moment, because that's a whole other discussion.
That's what I came to this series for.
But Rosetta's story was just, the filler episodes that centered around her were fun.
Yep. Rosetta becoming a regular member of the cast.
One of the later episodes where Sora takes a break from training and runs into, what's her name? I think her name's Mary. And, you know, again, the person who now trains Seeing Eye Dogs.
That was very essential to the story, that episode.
I call it because it felt like it didn't need to be there, but it was very central to the story and helped move the character, which is something I think people don't realize. That's not something a filler episode can do. A filler episode really is just an episode that allows for time that sometimes isn't there normally for the characters that they can learn something that will move the character along on its journey and path through the story.
Anything that advances the story or, you know, or advances the character. I don't think you'd call that a filler episode. I think, you know, it's not as heavy an episode, but a filler episode would be one where nothing happens. And there really aren't that many in this series.
Yeah, there aren't that many. But I just think that a great strength of this season, amazingly, I think the supporting cast plays a whole lot more in role of this season being good than the first season does. And don't get me wrong, the supporting cast in the first season is just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, they really, like I said, this series doesn't waste characters.
No, it doesn't. Let's talk about comedy. And I think we're going to break comedy into two parts, talking about the overall comedy and then talking about the two main pieces of comic relief. But the comedy is just wonderful. A lot of it is also part how they sort of pace each episode. This series is a series to where the season and each individual episode are paced very much like a French circus act would be. You have the serious part, then you sort of have the clown routine, some comedy, then you have a serious part, a clown routine, and then a serious part to end.
I did not see that. Good catch, actually.
But now that you think of it, it makes sense, doesn't it?
A bit, yeah.
And the comedy is really, and you know what, the comedy is very much like clown acts. When you look at the core aspect of all the comedy scenes and all the comedy in the series, even to the point to where you have a clown act doing something funny and something that makes you laugh coming out of it, like the caterpillar routine.
Man, Anna actually finally getting to start her clown troupe was really a hallmark of the series.
Yes, it was.
Actually, I think it was also a great sign of just how everybody is starting to grow.
Yeah.
You have Mia, you know, becoming a part of the technical side more and more, and Anna actually setting herself up as the clown.
Yeah, of the stage. And also that including Ken. And again, Ken's great comedic relief.
Nobody cares about Ken.
Ken. And he's the end. It's like, yet he steals the show. And there's that part where he's like, his head is stuck between the girl's legs. Like, they when they're in the, when they're doing the caterpillar act in the airport. And he's like, hanging in the air, like, help me! I'm trying to think of great comment. Sarah, of course, is funny. I'm trying to stay from, again, away from the two most obvious.
Layla even gets to periodically be funny.
Who? Leon?
Layla.
Oh, Layla, yeah. Especially towards the end where she, like, changes her mind in a split second.
Layla's great contribution is the fact that she doesn't have to be funny like everyone else. She's very much the deadpan one.
Yeah, it's a natural funny, like, you know, when she's making coffee.
Okay.
And it's, like, obviously this is a person who hasn't made a cup of coffee in her life.
It's like, Sora looked so scared.
There's the episode, and again, this is a filler episode, Mr. Policeman's birthday and proposal to Kate.
Yep.
That was like, where do you have Rosetta and Marriott? Marriott's in a trash can. Why? I don't know.
Because she can be.
Rosetta's a palm tree. Earlier in the episode, they have Ken as a freaking vendor machine. Who's going to be fooled by this? It's a vending machine with a head popping out. It's so over the top. It's hilarious. In that same vein, again, going back to France, when you know they go to the wrong circus. Oh, I love that scene.
Throwing knives at... Oh, God. Oh, God, the abuse.
No, I love Sora getting... I love Sora getting shot out of a cannon.
She just goes with it.
Actually, that has more appreciation for me now, because for those who don't know, my sister works for Barnum & Bailey Circus, and one of her good friends is the female who is the human cannonball.
Yeah, I'll tell you this much, she ends up in the wrong circus, and yet she still learns something, she still makes friends, and she still helps people.
I just love that last part where, you know, when Ken finds out the wrong circus, and in the background, there's Sora, and her mouth is around the wheel, and it's the wheelbarrow trick! Oh my God, it's so funny. But obviously the big comedy team here is, not team, but two big comedy reliefs are Jonathan and, of course, the Herbert the Pervert of anime, The Fool.
I don't know if you can really count, you know, Fool as a major source of comedy in the series, especially in the second half where he's barely there.
Well, I think his presence is toned down in this season, but he's still there enough, and he brings some very good comedic relief. I mean, it is the typical how many ways can we kill Fool comedy.
Yeah. Kind of rough, and the character who's supposed to be the wise advisor being played up for laughs.
But that's what makes his character so... I mean, there's literally... He has Team Rocket moment. Because there's a moment where, you know, May shakes up the Coke, opens it, and it launches Fool off. And he comes back like, that was very, I did not expect that coming, only to be hit again.
Oh God, why? He's Roshi. He's Master
yes.
Roshi.
You're right, he is. He's Master Roshi. I think my particular favorite Fool moment, though, in this season is the Lionhead moment. It's where, you know, Sora... Which, by the way, that whole thing where Sora comes back and she gives gifts to all the her friends, and she gives a ninja kit to Sarah. It's a purple outfit with a mask. Why is that a ninja? I don't know. And she gives Ken a globe.
She was running low on her. Here!
And then you have that great bit to where, you know, May shows up, but she's behind the glass, and she's yelling, nobody hears her. She starts barking. And her head starts moving like her body. The animation of her head is very much like that of when her body's in the demon spiral. Which makes me laugh. Oh, but speaking of May, when she barks.
When she barks.
In the second episode of the series, you know, she would go, I just found that funny.
I never stop finding that funny.
I do. I always find that funny. I'm just bringing up funny moments in the series to bring up the comedy here.
If you ever seen the that OVA, the It's Good, Good?
Yeah.
Her barking there is so endearing.
But Floor, it's just... And, yeah, he brings the wisdom to the series, but, you know, he still has that comedy relief, and it is that, like, he's always trying to just cuddle with some girl, or, like, you should go get striped panties. Why?
He has that look of, if only.
If only. I think he was better in the first season. And then Jonathan. It's just... way he reacts to things is just funny.
He's a Seal Moe mascot character. He's gotta be.
I mean, I know I'm pointing out the obvious, but it's just, that's the sort of comedy that this series has. It's fun to go back and talk about the funny scenes.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I've almost left Edwin comatose because I've been so right throughout this episode.
You haven't done anything glaringly wrong yet where I can just yell at you and
that hurts you.
No, it doesn't hurt me. Not really. Just you know, like I said, the series just doesn't have the. Oh my god, this thing happened. Oh man, that was so great. It doesn't have. I mean, it has good moments, but it doesn't have the same impact. Like I said.
Yeah, as we'll get to in a second, yeah, this is not the first season. Last but not least, the pace. I think, you know, as I talked about before, where it had that pace to where it was sort of imitating a French circus, I thought the pace throughout the series was excellent.
I felt like they could have done more. I mean, it really, like you said, they spent way too much time on that half, they just keep breaking and breaking and breaking Sora.
Yeah.
It was relentless. It was Japanese. Japanese shows have this tendency where if they want to torture their character, they'll just drag it out because they feel like that somehow makes for good TV. And it's just, after a while, there's no point anymore.
Yeah, but... I'll say this for this series, is that while I think it goes too long, it doesn't go so long that it completely damages the series. It hurts it, it doesn't make it as good as the first season, but it's not a matter of, you know, they were, I think, purposely trying to torture the viewer. It's just that they overestimated themselves and went a bit too long with it.
Yeah, They invested too much into, man, we need to take her down so that we can build her. There is self-importance there.
Yeah. So, I think that's it for story. So, overall, what do you think of the series, and what rating would you give it out of 5 stars?
I don't know. Star rating. Bleh. But when I think of the series, you know what? If you're going to watch Kaleidostar, you have to watch it as a whole. You can't kind of come into the second half and expect the series that you get. It doesn't... It lacks... As a standalone thing, it lacks the punch of the first series. But as a part of the whole, it's still very good.
Well, you know, with that being said, you know, I don't think we really talked about, you know, really how the first 2 episodes of the season... are flashback episodes.
Yeah, the first 2 episodes are pretty much... They were meant as a bridge for the Japanese audience to keep them abreast. They were essentially clip shows.
You said breast.
How old are you?
I'm 5 years old. But overall, I think the season as a standalone is still good. I think those two episodes do enough to bridge what happened from the past season that somebody can just jump onto this season. It is a bit rougher, I think, than the first season. And, as we said before, I think it's that first half, they overestimate themselves and go a bit too far with the breaking down of the hero. At the same point in time, what I think really does save it, though, is that the building back up to the angel maneuver is beautiful and gorgeous and wonderful, and you find yourself cheering. I mean, I just like at the end of the first season, I cannot watch the final episode without tearing up.
The angel maneuver, it's fun to watch, but it's one of the things where, like, 20 minutes after it's done, logic sets up, like, wait. So they just let people randomly walk up onto the stage and start performing, even though these people should be tripping over each other? Wait. No, hold on.
Well, you know, it's Sora. Sora accomplishing what she wanted, a stage enjoyed by everybody.
It's a stage that is anarchic. Anarchic? It's anarchy. There are no rules. There are no laws. None of this should be working.
But that's the power of the angel maneuver and the power of a true star.
That's the power of friendship.
We become My Little Pony! Thank you, everyone! My Little Pony, My Little Pony. Why do I roll that theme song?
Because you're a terrible
Somebody
person.
Shoot me!
Either way. One, My Little Pony Friendship and Buzz Magic is wonderful. I'll admit that.
It saves it, and at the end of the day, I think it's a good series. I think the first season is better overall, because I think overall,
it's paced better.
It's more
it's got a clearer goal, it doesn't waste our time with needless melodrama, you know.
Well, I was going to say it's more well-rounded. I mean, there's melodrama in the first season.
There's melodrama, but it's not quite...
It's entertaining.
It's not
more
entertaining. It doesn't spend as much time on it. Like, you go from, okay, Sora wants to get Layla's respect. Sora becomes Layla's partner. Sora takes over Layla's part. Sora, you know, and then we have...
Yuri.
And then we have, Yuri's taken over the stage to defeat Flagging Sails. That came out of, it was like, that happened. Now Sora and Layla are going to practice this new move. Yuri's stage isn't as interesting. It didn't linger on any one conflict.
Yeah, and it kept you on your toes.
Yeah.
But at the same point in time, like I said, I think it's... still a really great series. And when you connect it as a whole, it's one of the reasons why I think the Kaleidos Star franchise is one of the best anime franchises out there and of all time, in my personal view.
You know, I like that it was good. The ancillary material also makes it so much better.
Yeah.
Because you have the Layla Hamilton story, where, she's on that bike trip. We have the...
It's Layla Hamilton is Lance Armstrong, except that unlike Lance, she has no balls.
Layla has all the balls. Shut up. we have the Rosetta's actual story, where she's setting up to become the star, after she inherits that role from Sora.
Yeah, which, by the way, that little OVA is on the Kaleidos, at least the ADV release of Kaleidos Star New Wings. That it's called The Extra Stage. It's that OVA.
I think there is a mysterious OVA somewhere that tells the story of Layla developing her special move.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I mean, I've heard there's dozens of little OVAs here or there that have never been seen outside of Japan, unfortunately.
And then there's, of course, the Good Dayo Good OVA, which was wonderfully fun. It was so, the CG was so bad, but I love it.
So overall, what rating would you give the season?
Clydestar, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it is so good. If you're going to give it anything, it has to be, you know, a good solid 4 out of 5.
Well, I'll go a point higher. I would give it a 4.5 out of 5. It's not perfect by any means, as opposed to the first season, which I think is perfect. But that's only because of it's a miscalculation by the writer. And again, I can appreciate the writer messing up as long as they do something to sort of redeem themselves. And I do feel they've redeemed themselves by the end of the series. But it is a glaring enough flaw to make it a 4.5 out of 5. So definitely, I guess our suggestion is definitely pick it up and watch this series.
Yeah.
So that's it for this episode. Thank you, Edwin. Do you want to let people know where they can find you on the interwebs?
No, I don't. I like my privacy.
You don't even want to tell them about Comic Book Crazy?
Fine. You can also catch me and Lucid. Me and Thomas here on our show Comic Book Crazy, where we talk about how much I hate Dan Didio.
Did you just confuse me with Lucid?
I can't keep my old podcasting friends straight anymore. I'm getting old. It's the Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell Lucid on you. He's gonna hunt you down now. How dare you confuse me with Thomas?
Yeah. That was a thing I did.
Well, anyways, of course, there's also all the ways that you can find me. Of course, remember, you can contact the show through email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by searching for the Absolution Network. We're the one that's about Toonami. There's apparently another page on Facebook called Absolution Network.
That one's run by bastards. You should avoid it.
And of course, you can always leave a comment on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes, of course, the Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris, where every episode they release, they talk about anime and trash on me.
That seems to be a common thread. I don't think this should be a thing that's actually mentioned anymore. That's not news. That's just par for the course.
It's what all my friends do. Hey, let's talk about anime and trash on Thomas. Of course, the aforementioned Enemy Said Comic Book Crazy podcasting network, which features Hexcast and Comic Book Crazy. And, of course, Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, where you can find episodes of my Tokyo SOS podcast. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man, Crawlspace, Steven Seichler's Major Spoilers podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network. So, with that being said, thank you, guys.
Please comment. Please comment. That way we can read some of them on the air, and it's less time I have to listen to his opinions.
Yes. Please comment. So that's it for this episode. I honestly do not know what I'm going to be reviewing next. But more than likely, my next review is going to be in December, which means it's going to be December-themed. And I have a couple of series that I plan on watching that are Christmas-themed. Some fun ones. We're going to have, I think, some stop-motion to review. We're going to have some Disney to review. So it's going to be fun in December, and hopefully I'll have a holiday special of some kind to release. So, until next time, my Tsunami Generation.
Optimism. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Optimism, critic, and love you people. that we're telling you this.
Stay golden, everyone!
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.
So with that, we're going to take our break. I'm going to play a couple promos for you. And when you come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. So we'll be right back, folks.
And while you're gone, we'll be playing a new game called What's in My Pants?
I'm cutting that out.
Oh, come on!
Okay, I'm left physically disturbed by that comment. I'm cutting it out.